after primary election day. That's what we're going to be talking about first thing on the program today. And just a second, we'll introduce our guest. Doug Saltzman is with us. Later on the program today, fascinating study. A gentleman by the name of Dale Peterson decided to do some research into the death of an American researcher who was on the team with Dr. Jane Goodall, probably the most famous researcher of chimpanzees the world has ever known. Now, the young American volunteer was Ruth Davis, and she died mysteriously in Africa. The story of that, the true story of love and death in an African wilderness, coming up later on the program today. And also, we'll have a couple of master gardeners with us, Penn State master gardeners, talking about spring planting and the big spring garden show coming up this Saturday at Alameda Park. All of that later on the program. First, we chat with Doug Saltzman, who is a well-known political and polling analyst and a frequent guest here on the It's Your Turn program. Doug, nice to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me on, Dave.
I didn't know whether you'd be ready to go or not. I know you had a long night last night. You were on KDKA most of the night, I think, weren't you?
Yeah, for 3 hours. It was a long one.
Well, it's always a long one on election night. We were on the air here, too. Any big surprises for you in the election? The biggest surprise for me was not that John Fetterman won the Democratic nomination for lieutenant governor, but his margin of victory. He was a runaway winner, wasn't he?
Yeah. You and I would be in lockstep. Yeah, I was convinced that the lieutenant governor, the incumbent Mike Stack, was in trouble. And I had a feeling that Fetterman had a good chance to win for geography reasons. And I can touch on that a little bit later as well. Geography played a big role in yesterday's primary. But the margin of his victory was just overwhelming. That was a big, big surprise. And also the fact that not only did an incumbent lieutenant governor lose for the first time in state history in a primary, he came in fourth out of five candidates. It was, to be very blunt, a humiliating loss for an incumbent lieutenant governor.
Well, Mike Stack, he'd been controversial. Didn't he have some run-ins with his state police detail or something like that? I mean, Governor Wolf actually almost disowned him, didn't he?
Basically, he did. Very little, if any, communication between the two. He was accused and admitted to not treating his staff well, including his protection detail. In fact, the governor, something I disagreed with, frankly, took away his state police security detail, which I think is not the right thing to do. I think the lieutenant governor deserves a bodyguard. He's second in line to running the state, oversees emergency management office, that sort of thing. But nonetheless, there was no connection at all between these two candidates. Usually at this point, they have yard signs with both their names on it, that sort of thing. Yeah. But that wasn't the case here at all. And again, when you take a look at someone like John Fetterman, the mayor of Braddock, he was the only candidate out of five on this side of the state. Of course, Mike Stack from Philadelphia, Nina Ahmad from Philadelphia, a real estate developer, Ray Sosa from Montgomery County, and Cassie Cazone from Chester County, all from the southeast. Mm-hmm. And so Fetterman was by himself out here. Usually, an incumbent, if he is being challenged, he likes a lot of competition. Yeah, in this case, five people running, he could have won with 21%. Because in Pennsylvania, as you know, Dave, you don't need a majority to win. You just need a plurality. Yeah. There are no runoffs in our state. Yeah.
John Fetterman, mayor of Braddock, first came to prominence statewide a few years back in another unsuccessful state race. He is an imposing figure. He is a large man. He's a tall man. He's a big guy.
6'8". He's not obese, but he's just a big guy. And I tell you, and it's funny, he's legendary for wearing T-shirts and shorts, but I think he actually had on long pants last night, so that was quite a departure for him. He's a fascinating guy. I've interviewed him, and he's an interesting guy. But again, out of five candidates, the only one in politics, as we say, west of the Susquehanna, which, of course, is a river that runs down the middle of the state, mm-hmm. goes through Harrisburg. So he was the only one, as of course Scott Wagner, who won for the in the gubernatorial primary on the Republican side. Two candidates from the west. He's the only one from the east, and Paul Mango and Laura Ellsworth together got many more votes than he did. Scott Wagner. So I think Mango may have won that race had Laura Ellsworth not been in. She clearly played the spoiler.
Let's talk about that race. Of course, on the Democratic side, there was no contest. The Democratic incumbent, Governor Tom Wolf, will seek re-election to his second term, and he will go against Scott Wagner, who's currently a state senator. He was in a vicious and extremely negative campaign with the Paul Mango. In fact, Terry Madonna, we had a story from him a week or so ago here on WISR. He said it was the nastiest exchange of TV campaign ads that he could ever remember here in Pennsylvania. It was nasty, wasn't it?
It sure was. The only thing I can remember that may have come close was the race between Bob Casey Sr. and Bill Scranton Jr. When they ran in 1986. That was a very, very nasty campaign. When some of the first time when you saw such vicious negative ad campaigns, the Maharishi ad, for instance, talking about Bill Scranton's drug use, talking about him traveling to Africa to meet with the Maharishi. Those are playing the sitar music. McCarville's first foray really into national prominence. Of course, the political consultant that supported then Bill Clinton and later Hillary Clinton. That was his first foray into national prominence in that campaign. That goes way back to 1986. I have not seen such a nasty campaign since that one.
The victory by Scott Wagner sets up an interesting battle in November. We have a Democratic incumbent governor who's pretty much anti-Trump, and Scott Wagner, the Republican challenger, is very much a pro-Trump candidate. I would imagine that we will see several visits by Trump here to Pennsylvania in advance of the November election. What do you think?
I agree with that, absolutely. In fact, if this race stays close and competitive, I would predict this will be Pennsylvania's first $200 million campaign.
Wow.
I mean, the last time Pat Toomey won, it was $120 million. I would predict this would hit $150 to $200 million in spending. A wonderful for organizations like yours and mine, radio stations, and the media. Sometimes you run out of ads, you can sell. Assuming it stays competitive, it's going to be a very, very expensive race. If it's not competitive, then they're not going to be able to raise the money in national spenders aren't going to jump in and spend their money here if they don't think, especially if Wagner doesn't keep it close.
Now, in the race for Senate, one of Pennsylvania's two U.S. Senate seats is up for election this year, not Pat Toomey. He was recently in office a couple of years back, but Bob Casey, the senior senator from Pennsylvania, the Democratic incumbent, son of the late former governor, Bob Casey Jr., is seeking re-election. He was unopposed yesterday, of course, in the Democratic primary. Lou Barletta won the Republican primary to go up against Casey in November, and this is another stark contrast. Barletta is a voracious, loud supporter of Trump. Casey, just the opposite. So I think the national media are going to be paying a lot of attention to Pennsylvania given this senatorial race and that gubernatorial race come November.
Oh, I agree with you. And not only is Barletta loud and voracious in defense of Trump, he's just loud and voracious. And and compared to Bob Casey, who some joke could get arrested for loitering at some of his own events, he's such a low-key guy. And I don't mean that negatively. He's just a very quiet person. His very unassuming approach to things, his mannerisms and his speaking is very sort of monotone at times. So, yeah, this is going to be quite a battle. Barletta didn't win this primary probably as big as some thought he would. He got about almost 64% against an underfunded and Jim Christiana right near us out here in the West, a state representative from Beaver County. In his fifth term, he term limited himself to five terms. So this is, even on his own website, he mentions that he's in his fifth and final term. So he I think, jumped for the big time on this one. Got about 38%, did better than most people thought. But he was going up against almost a national figure. Lou Barletta, of course, former mayor of Hazleton, came to national prominence. He's one of the first to really speak out against illegal immigration and made a name for himself through that. Of course, now he's serving in Congress. Came to Congress, was sworn in his first term in 2011.
Do you have any early thoughts about how close that race may be? Is Bob Casey still fairly popular?
He is popular. Roll Call newspaper, which is a Capitol Hill newspaper, very well respected, reports on everything happening in Washington, and is pretty even-handed in their approach on things, has said of the 26 Democratic senators up for re-election this year, they're considering him the 10th most vulnerable, which puts him up here into prominence where it might get some national attention from Republican donors that might want to help Barletta. Pennsylvania's had such a huge switch in sort of the approach from their U.S. senators. Pat Toomey and Bob Casey are both very low-key guys. You don't hear a lot from them, especially on the national stage, compared to our former U.S. senators, Arlen Specter, my former boss, and Rick Santorum, who always seem to be on national programs and involved in very large national issues. So we have a very different approach from our U.S. senators these days.
Well, but, on the other hand, that could be a help for Casey, because I've talked to a lot of people who are sick and tired of the loudmouths, to put it in one way. In Washington, D.C., they appreciate a person who's a little bit more low-key and a little bit more prone to compromise, as opposed to being, very, very hard-headed.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Yeah, Bob Casey is well-liked. I don't know if I've ever spoken to anybody who said they didn't think he was a nice fella. He really is a genuinely nice person, and doesn't like confrontation and doesn't take it that way, although he's been very critical of the president. But just in a low-key sort of manner, compared to perhaps somehow some others talk about our president. But I think this is going to get attention. It's going to be a very expensive race once again. Oddly enough, both from the same corner of the state, the northeastern corner of the state, the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton area, Luzerne County. So they're both hometown boys in that corner, going up against each other. So it'll be interesting, to say the least. We have two big-time races here in. Statewide races in Pennsylvania.
We're talking, listeners, if you've joined us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Doug Saltzman is our guest, political and polling analyst, and top aide to the late Senator Arlen Specter. Boy, suddenly it seems like a long time ago for Senator Specter, Doug. When did he pass away? Do you remember what year it was?
He passed away now 4 years ago. It is surprising how long he's been out of office. He's been out of office since 2010. So he lost his primary that year when he switched over to the Democratic side.
I can remember covering at least three or four town hall meetings that he had here in Butler, and he would... He liked to work in the round with people all around him. He had no notes whatsoever, just a microphone, and it was interesting. His town hall meetings were interesting.
And they weren't always pleasant, let me tell you. And I'm not just talking about Butler County. I'm just talking about town hall meetings. We used to say happy people don't come to town hall meetings.
Especially
we'd have ones on a Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Only the mad folks got up that early to come to a town hall meeting, and Specter held them well. We walked out of one where people were insulting and degrading to him, and I said, Senator, why do you do this? He said, listen, if I can't handle a town hall meeting, I don't deserve to be in the U.S. Senate. Hmm. And that's what he told me. And he was one of the last few to really do them. Now, there's security risks. They weren't back then. We always had police at our events, just in case. And in many cases, they were in plain clothes. But nowadays, they really are security risk to members of Congress to have these town hall meetings. In fact, they don't even call them town hall meetings anymore, just because it just enrages people and it turns them out and turns out to be angry. And it's a shame, because that's an important thing members of Congress can do. But you also, I don't think you want people going through a metal detector coming to a town hall meeting. So it's a shame that it's turned to that in politics.
It is. Starting with Gabby Giffords out in Arizona some years ago.
Exactly.
Very tragic.
Very interesting congressional race. Pennsylvania, up in your region there, will have something that's not going to happen anywhere else in the United States. Two incumbent members of Congress are going to be running against each other in the fall. Connor Lamb, of course, who won the special election just 9 weeks ago, is going up against Keith Rothfuss in a very new congressional district. It's the former 12th congressional district, now the 17th district. And, of course, when the State Supreme Court rewrote the district maps, these two fellas got put into the same in the same district. So it'll be the only race in the entire nation where two incumbent congressmen are running against each other.
This one is
very rare.
This one is intriguing for me. Keith Rothfuss seems to be pretty competent, pretty popular in the time that he's been in office. And then you have Connor Lamb, who was the upset winner over Rick Saccone just a few months ago and gained national prominence. So will that momentum carry over into November? I don't know, but it's fascinating to think about.
It will carry over to a degree. However, the difference here is that only 25% of the district that he won that special election in 9 weeks ago is part of the new district, whereas 55% of Keith Rothfuss's former 12th congressional district is in this new district. You almost need a program to keep track of this stuff, Dave.
Yeah, you do.
So again, 75% of this district is new to Connor Lamb. He didn't campaign in it in a special election. And only 45% of it is new. So he has 55% of his old district, Keith Rothfuss. So, yeah, this is going to get some national prominence. I would have to give the advantage right now to Keith Rothfuss because of that reason, the district set up, and also because he's a longtime incumbent from that area. So it'll be very very interesting to watch that race come about. But, again, it's not going to get the attention because you have a U.S. Senate race in Pennsylvania, a governor's race in Pennsylvania, other congressional races in Pennsylvania. It was the only race in the nation 9 weeks ago. Good heavens, I did interviews on Fox and MSNBC and CBS News Radio nationally because they were so interested, the national media was so interested in that special election race. And yesterday, of course, Rick Saccone, who lost that special election just 9 weeks ago, lost the primary yesterday to State Senator Guy Reschenthaler.
Yeah, and that... He may not have been helped a great deal by President Trump, who called him a weak candidate when he lost to Connor Lamb 9 weeks ago.
Well, that was sort of fascinating. If you saw their commercials, of course, the president said that, not realizing some nearby heard him say it. He said that sort of backstage. Then he went out on the stage and said nice things about Rick Saccone. So Rick Saccone ran ads in this primary, quoting Trump, saying good things about him. His opponent, State Senator Guy Reschenthaler, ran ads quoting what Trump said about him being a weak candidate. So they were able to use the president's own words for both candidates. That doesn't happen too often.
Let's talk about two of the other congressional races. Butler County really got chopped up when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that we needed to draw new district lines for Congress. Butler County had been totally in what was then the 3rd congressional district, incumbent native son, Republican Mike Kelly. Now, not only is the district redrawn, and it's only half of Butler County, but it also has a new number. It's now the 16th.
16th, and it's divided with the 15th district, exactly.
And the 16th is generally the western half of Butler County. There are a couple of precincts down in the Cranberry area that are in the 17th, but most of western Butler County is in the 16th, from Butler County all the way up to Erie. Now, Mike Kelly has been an easy winner ever since he took that seat.
Kathy Delkemper, I recall.
Yes.
I think she was the one-term incumbent who beat Phil English.
Mm-hmm. She was only in for 2 years, and then Mike Kelly beat her, and it's been clear sailing for him ever since. He might have a little bit of a battle come November. Ron DiNicola, who's an attorney from Erie, which is where the biggest population base in that district is, will face off against him. And you're going to give... you're going to give Mike Kelly automatically all of Butler County, and probably DiNicola gets a good chunk out of Erie. It looks like it's going to be, to me at least, the middle geography of this district that determines who's going to win.
Right, Crawford, Mercer, Lawrence County. And now this new district has all of Erie County. It was split before between the 3rd district and the 5th. Erie County was the eastern part of the county going to the 5th congressional district, which covered most of the central part of the state, north-central part of the state, and the 3rd district being on the western half of Erie County. But now this new 16th district, get out your program, folks, includes all of Erie County. and it hadn't before. At one point, it did in previous times. That district always had all of Erie County when Tom Bridger represented it, for instance, mm-hmm. English. So now it's back to Alder County being part of this new 16th congressional district. But you're right. That's a good analysis on your part, Dave. That Butler's going to go to Kelly and Dina Cola will get Erie, so then they're going to divide up the rest of the I-79 congressional district, as some folks are calling it, Crawford, Mercer, Lawrence County, will make up the difference in the rest of that congressional race. So you have another interesting one there, and that's, you know, suddenly they're going to be spending money in the Erie media market, and now in the Pittsburgh media market, and Pittsburgh's not cheap to spend money in on a race like this, which is grabbing, you know, the southern part of that district.
The redrawing of the lines resulted in a number of additional candidates who decided they would take a crack at it. One of them was Chris Rieger in Cranberry Township. He lost to Dina Cola, but, you know, it wasn't all that long ago when we didn't even have anybody running in these races.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, it's one thing that came out of this, there are more candidates than in the previous years. There are many more. There could be as many as six or seven women running for Congress in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania does not have a female member of Congress at this point. Melissa Hart, of course, served in Congress from here in southwestern Pennsylvania. Alison Schwartz, who gave up her seat to run for governor, lost the primary to Tom Wolf, but from the southeastern part of the state. So, so a lot of changes coming to the congressional map in Pennsylvania. And even the most ardent Republicans would have trouble not admitting the incredible gerrymandering job that was the former district.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was a district out in the eastern part of the state, the 7th congressional district, that people joked that it was a goofy kicking Mickey Mouse. That's what the map looked like. In fact, one part of the district was so narrow it only included a restaurant to connect one part of the district to another one. So it was a gerrymandering dream set up for Pennsylvania, and the Supreme Court, in a sort of a fascinating way, the state Supreme Court redrew the district. And the U.S. Supreme Court didn't take the case up, saying it's up to the states, even though the U.S. Constitution says it's up to the legislature to draw a line. So it'll be interesting to see what comes about through all of this.
Now, tell me if my analysis is correct on this. Barring any additional court cases, which seem unlikely, these new district numbers and district lines will remain in effect, even though we've got a census coming up in 2 years. There's some lapse time after a census, usually a year or two before new districts are drawn. So I'm guessing that the districts we have right now are going to be in place at least until 2022. Does that seem right to you?
Yeah, that's my understanding as well, and that's how it's been in the past. Yeah, obviously the census is in 2020. They can't redraw the district then because the census isn't complete,
mm-hmm.
But it will be complete in 2020, and then for the races in 2022, the new districts would kick in. So again, not quite as short as, say, Connor Lamb serving in a district that's only going to last 9 months from that special election. But these other ones, we're looking at seats that will only last 4 years, and then they redraw them again. I was involved sort of tangentially when I worked for the state senate and the redrawing of maps several years, a couple of decades ago. And that was really when computers first started kicking in. And okay, we need more Republican Union families from this area. And you put it into a computer and get that. But now the Supreme Court obviously is taking a close look at this, the state Supreme Court, and they're not going to allow it to happen what happened again in the redistricting that occurred in 2012.
Yeah, and to be fair, Democrats gerrymandered as well whenever they were in power. The big difference this last time was now we have computers that can really... I mean, you know, you're not guessing anymore. They can take it right down to the neighborhood. That was, as you said a few minutes ago, even...
And to even go the spoils, you know, that's what you get when you have when you control the legislature. And nobody can imagine the Democrats are going to gain control of the legislature, the state legislature, between now and 2022, because it's such overwhelming Republican numbers in both the House and especially in the Senate. Because those districts were not redrawn as a part of this redistricting plan sent down by the state Supreme Court,
mm-hmm. And they have been Gerrymandered as well. Here in Butler County now, I don't know whether you've ever looked at the map, but we actually, there are seven different state house representatives that represent parts of Butler County. Seven.
Yeah, I know.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, some folks think that's good because you have more people representing your county. Others think I'd rather have just one totally focused on the county. So it's really sort of how you spin your thoughts rack on something like that. But it's not bad having seven folks looking out for your interest, I suppose.
There's one other race that we accidentally skipped over, and that's the whole eastern half of Butler County, which is now into the newly renumbered 15th Congressional District. And take a look at the map on this one, folks. It stretches from Butler County, eastern Butler County, the whole way out to State College. It's an enormous district. The incumbent is Republican Glenn Thompson. I don't know much about him because, you know, he's never been in our area before. He'll be challenged by Susan Bosser from Indiana, who won the Democratic nomination yesterday. But it's really hard to think how people of eastern Butler County have anything in common with State College, isn't it?
Right. And the folks living up along upstate New York, you know, this map, this district goes all the way up to Warren and McKean counties, Bradford, PA, right along the New York border. So you're going from Johnstown to State College to parts of Butler County to New York State. It is one of the larger congressional districts in the country where states have more than one or two congressional districts. It is a very, very big district, and a lot of traveling for that particular congressman, to say the least.
The reason for that is in north-central Pennsylvania is very sparse population. So,
perhaps Elk County, where there generally are more elk than people. So, yeah, these are areas that don't have a lot of population. Very rural, very conservative Republican area. I'd be surprised if the incumbent did not win. So
we've got imposed by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court new district lines, new lines and new numbers for the congressional districts. What are the odds that state legislative districts will be redrawn prior to the census? You think that might happen or no?
Yeah, I'd be very surprised. I think the state Supreme Court or somebody would have filed suit to get that to happen already. And it has not, and we're getting just so close. Although last time, good heavens, you know, you had this exchange within 9 weeks of a primary. You had campaigns that shut down operations in part of districts because they weren't going to be representing them anymore in this primary. You know, it was sort of fascinating when I talked to some of the campaign managers and the candidates themselves. He said, last night I was campaigning in an area I found out is not even in my new district. So, yeah, you almost need a GPS to figure out, okay, are we in our district now or are we not in our district now? So, yeah, I would not suspect that the state legislative lines will be redrawn between now and 2022.
One final question for you, Doug Saltzman. There have been other states, several other states now, that have set up independent commissions to draw the boundaries of legislative and congressional districts, taking it out of the hands of whichever party controls the state legislature. Do you think there's any chance of that happening in Pennsylvania, that will create some kind of an independent commission that'll draw the lines?
Well, I think it depends if how cute, and I put that sort of in quotes, how cute the Republicans get in this next redistricting. If they try to keep it more fair as opposed to what the recent one did, the old map did, I don't think that would be required. But if they do go over the top again and do one of those great gerrymandered districts that got them a lot of seats in Pennsylvania, then the state Supreme Court might jump in again and do something like that. So I think it really what comes down to 2022 and what they decide at that point to do. Because the governor might push for something like that, but he doesn't have, by heavens, what is it? There are 34 Republicans out of the 50 members of the state Senate, 34, 35, 36. It's just so overwhelming, which is what's fascinating about Pennsylvania in the last gubernatorial race, is that voters went in and voted for a very liberal Tom Wolf, rejecting Tom Corbett, but then at the same time electing the most Republican, most conservative legislature and memory for most folks. So it's very interesting to see how Pennsylvania is, and I always call it active voting. They clearly were not going in 4 years ago and pulling their party lever, the Republican lever or the Democratic lever. They decided to split their votes. So it's interesting to see how this all comes about in Pennsylvania with such a such a switchover in between the governor's opinions on issues and the legislature's.
Not just the governor. Many of the other statewide offices, too, attorney general, auditor general, are all Democrats.
No, exactly. Exactly. They voted the most Republican conservative state house and state senate, and at the same time swept in Democrats in all the statewide row offices. So it was a very interesting race just a couple years ago as well on those statewide races.
Well, it's going to be interesting come November, and after the results of yesterday's primary, believe me, Pennsylvania is going to be in the national spotlight come November, particularly in that gubernatorial race and in that U.S. Senate race. Doug Saltzman, political and polling analyst, our guest. Doug, always nice to talk with you. You always have good insight for us. Thanks for being with us again today.
I hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks so much, Dave. You have a good day.
Sure, you too. So long. Doug Saltzman, former top aide to the late Senator Arlen Specter, visiting with us here today. Okay, we take a break. There's much more to come on the It's Your Turn program. I do want to give you a program alert for tomorrow. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow's program. Among our guests will be Dave Todd, the former general manager of what at that time was the Butler Works of Armco Steel. Dave Todd is extremely knowledgeable on the mill, as he calls it. In fact, he's written a couple of books about it. So we'll be talking about the history of Armco, the history of the mill, the history of the steel industry here in Butler. I'm really looking forward to it. Dave Todd will be with us at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. We'll have a nice, relaxing sit-down chat about Armco and now, of course, AK. Tomorrow on the It's Your Turn program. We take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about an interesting true story. And I must confess, this was something that I was not aware of until I heard about Dale Peterson. He'll be our next guest. If you would have asked me, do you know who Jane Goodall is? I would have said yes. Probably the most famous researcher of chimpanzees the world has ever known, Jane Goodall. But I did not know about one of the volunteers at her research camp in Tanzania, a young American volunteer, Ruth Davis, who died while on research. And it was a very mysterious death. And nobody was quite sure whether it was an accident or whether she was killed on purpose. Dale Peterson writes about the ghosts of Gombe, a true story of love and death in an African wilderness. It's a fascinating story. And we'll talk to Dale Peterson about that here on It's Your Turn on WISR, coming up in just a couple of minutes.
The big day is almost here. Your son or daughter is about to graduate high school. Once the festivities are over, it's time to start thinking about college and, more importantly, how to pay for it. That's why the Armco Credit Union is proud to offer a brand new scholarship program. They are giving away $5,000 in total scholarship funds to graduating seniors who are bound for full-time enrollment at a college, university, or trade school. To fill out an application, visit armcocu.com. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and federally insured by NCUA.
Did you know that if you are a chiropractic patient at Applewood Chiropractic, a wellness program with unlimited use of their executive level fitness center may be covered by your insurance? Personalized wellness plans are designed to assist patients with treatment and preventative care. In addition to unlimited use of their safe, clean, non-intimidating fitness center, wellness plans include discounts on additional chiropractic visits, supplements, and 6 bioimpedance analyses per year. To learn more, call Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, 724-283-0 or visit applewoodchiro.com.
Can't wait, listeners, to talk to our guest coming up on this segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. If you're just joining us, our guest is Dale Peterson, author of an amazing and exciting new book entitled The Ghosts of Gombe. First of all, Dale Peterson, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us here for a few minutes today.
Great to be here, and thanks for inviting me, Dave.
This is a story, a true story, of love and death in an African wilderness, and it has to do with the Gombe relates to the name of the camp, right, in Tanzania?
Well, it's Jane Goodall's research camp, but it's in a place called the Gombe Stream National Park. So it's in the larger forest at the edge of Lake Tanganyika in Tanzania.
Jane Goodall is a name that probably most of our listeners have heard of, the famous researcher into the lives of chimpanzees, Jane Goodall. However, your story is about a young American volunteer at the camp by the name of Ruth Davis, and I dare say most of us had never heard of Ruth Davis before.
No, and that's not surprising. She wasn't a major character in Jane Goodall's life story. She was a young researcher there who was studying the chimpanzees, a young American, who, as you mentioned, died in at the camp in 1969.
This was in the middle of July, and I understand that she walked out of the camp to follow a chimpanzee into the forest, and she was never seen alive again.
That's right. She was never seen alive, and it took the rest of the researchers there 6 days to find the body. And it was, you know, her skull was smashed in. She was found at the base of a high waterfall.
So do we know whether it was an accident or was she murdered, or don't we know?
Well, it could have been an accident. She could have jumped. She could have been pushed. It's true. There are three possibilities. The conclusion at the time was that it was an accident, but I returned to that story, and it is, I think, a mystery of who done it or what done it, and I explore that issue, and that's the spine of the book. The book considers what happened, and in doing so, I recreate life at Jane Goodall's research camp over 2 years during that period.
You had already written a biography. In fact, it's considered by most people to be the definitive biography of Dr. Jane Goodall. So you actually kind of returned to the story, but concentrating this time on just this one mystery.
Right. So that's right. And I do mention the story in a chapter of the biography, but this is a full book. Returning to that chapter and exploring it in as great a detail as I can accomplish. So that's absolutely right. It is in some ways a continuation of the biography, but it's like taking a microscope to one period.
I'm intrigued by the title, Dale Peterson, The Ghosts of Gombe. Is that area haunted, or whence comes the title, The Ghosts of Gombe?
Well, it's a good question. People do tell ghost stories about Ruth, and so there is, in some sense, a haunting, and I think at least two of the people who were there during that period were haunted psychologically for the rest of their lives by Ruth's death. There's also the fact that at least two people report intense visions of Ruth that were just very unusual. You know, they both described them as seeming to be completely real. They were not dreams. That's part of the book. One of the people was her lover, Geza Teleki. And Ruth came to him in a vision about 40 years after her death.
Wow.
And the other case was Ruth's friend and fellow chimp researcher, Carol Gale, who had a vision of Ruth after she disappeared. And Ruth came, and Carol at that time was very ill with malaria. And Carol reports that Ruth burst into her room and slammed the door and demanded, "Why haven't you come to find me?" And as a result, Carol, the next day, even though she was still weak from malaria, got out of her bed and participated in the research. By then, there were up to 100 people looking for Ruth. Carol was the one who found the body.
Wow, I can feel the hairs on my arms kind of raising up a little bit as you tell this story, Dale. That is kind of ghostly. Yeah.
It is, yeah.
So this happened in 1969. Is Dr. Jane Goodall still alive? Is she still working in Africa? She must be well up in years if she's still alive.
Yeah, she's 84 years old. She's still very much alive and very active and very formidable, energetic, vital woman. And she's not doing research now. She's doing conservation, but she travels a tremendous amount and travels around the world giving talks and raising funds to continue her conservation work in Africa.
I want to make sure our listeners, if you're just joining us, nice to have you along. Dale Peterson is our guest. We're talking about his book, The Ghosts of Gombe, The True Story of Love and Death in an African Wilderness. I want to make sure, Dale, that our listeners don't get confused. There was another famous researcher who did not work with chimpanzees, but rather with gorillas. Her story was told in the film Gorillas in the Mist, starring Sigourney Weaver. Her name escapes me right now. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Well, Diane Fossey.
Diane Fossey, yes. She was killed in Africa, but this I just don't want people to get confused. That's a totally different story.
Right, absolutely different story.
Mm-hmm. And she was, in fact, murdered, although we don't know for sure about Ruth Davis. Do you know how old Ruth Davis was at the time of this tragedy?
She was 26, and she was in her mid-20s, and so that, of course, makes it a greater tragedy. Someone that young and full of promise is really difficult to fathom.
You became very good friends with Jane Goodall in the course of writing her biography. Was that authorized? She was okay with you writing her biography?
Yeah, it definitely was authorized. I've known Jane for 30 years, and I met her in 1989, when I'm a writer. I'm not a primatologist, but I had written a previous book about primates, and I decided that I wanted to write a book about chimps. And I was searching for an expert to help me write that book, and I located an expert in Washington, D.C. named Geza Teleki, and he said he would be willing to serve as my consultant. So I went down to Washington to speak to him, and when I got there, he said, are you interested in writing a book with Jane Goodall?
Huh.
And I said, sure, definitely. And so he introduced us a couple of weeks later, and Jane took a look at me, and I took a look at her, and she said, well, let me think about it. And we talked, and 15 minutes later, she said, okay, I'll do it. So we wrote a book together, and that was, co-authoring a book is like marrying somebody. It's, it's a big leap into the unknown. There's money involved. There's ego involved. And if it doesn't work out, you can wind up hating that person. If it does work out, you can wind up having a very, very long-term relationship that's very positive. And that's been the case with me and Jane. So after we finished that book, it was about chimpanzees and some ethical issues associated with the use of chimpanzees in American laboratories. When we finished that book in 93, it did well. And I met her again in 95. She came to the Boston area where I lived to give a lecture at MIT. And I drove her to the airport. And that was in December of 1995. And the National Geographic had just published a fluff piece on Jane Goodall, and I had read it, and I thought, this is doesn't really encompass the seriousness of what she's done, and the accomplishments. And I said to Jane, you know, I read this National Geographic piece, and I didn't really think it was really a good representation of your work. Well, she didn't say anything, and I said, you know, Jane, somebody should write a real biography of you. And she said, oh, you think so, do you? So we agreed, and she agreed instantly within about a half a second that this would be a good idea. So that's how it started, and I spent the next 10 years working on that. I was writing other books at the time, but it was a major, major job, and by the time I finished, as Jane would say, I knew her better than she knew herself, and I think some of that is true. I really, really went through everything, and her mother, who was alive at the time, gave me an amazing stash of about 1,500 letters that Jane had written since she was 9 years old. So Jane was always a charismatic person, even as a child. So her best friends always saved her letters. I mean, nobody threw away a letter from Jane Goodall. So I had this amazing cache of personal stuff, and that combined with all of the other material that anybody can find went into the biography.
We'll take a quick break. We have a few more minutes to chat with Dale Peterson. We'll pick up our conversation with him here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. Schnoor's Greenhouse, family-owned and operated since 1889. They are Butler's longtime trusted greenhouse. Beautiful, healthy plants, annuals, gorgeous hanging baskets, and boy, they got a lot of them right now. Beautiful. Vegetable plants, a tremendous selection from which to choose at Schnoor's Greenhouse. Family-owned and operated since 1889. Boy, that's a tradition, isn't it? 1889, wow. They're located off Herman Road. Look for Schnoor Road by the RC Men's Club. Any flower or plant you can imagine, they're going to have it for you at Schnoor's Greenhouse. Here are their hours. Monday through Friday, they're open 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., 9 to 8. Saturdays, they're open 9 to 5, and Sundays, 11 a.m. to 5. Schnoor's Greenhouse, Butler's longtime trusted greenhouse, just loaded with plants right now. Off Herman Road, look for Schnoor Road by the RC Men's Club.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Dale Peterson, author of The Ghosts of Gombe, a true story of love and death in an African wilderness. One final question about Jane Goodall. It's fascinating, Dale, that she, became such a good friend of yours and trusted you to co-author her biography because you have no formal training in zoology or biology or right. Primatology or anything like that, right?
That's absolutely right. No, I'm a writer. I did get a PhD in English years ago, and after getting the degree, I realized I didn't want to be a professor, so I became a carpenter. And then looking around for things to write about, because that was my ambition and goal, was to become a writer. And this was during the early 1980s in California, which was the time of the burst of computer industries when the, the first microprocessors were being produced, and it in fact it happened that one of the people whose house I worked on was a kid who had just gotten rich by starting his own computer company. He named his company after a piece of fruit, and his name was Steve Jobs.
Oh, wow.
And Steve gave me my first computer and also just gave me advice about computers. And so I knew that there was a publisher of a major publishing house who wanted somebody to write some computer books. And I called up the editor. I got his name, and I introduced myself, and he said, "Well, what do you know about computers?" And I said, "Absolutely nothing, and that's why you should hire me." And he did. So, he gave me a $5,000 advance, and I wrote my first computer book. And I do believe that if you can write, you should be able to write about anything. It's a general skill. It's not a specialized skill. And so having done 4 books on computers and also designed a computer game and made pretty good money, I told myself, well, what do I really want to write about? And the answer was animals. And I had recently read a newspaper article that my wife showed me about an endangered monkey in Brazil. So I said, oh, what kind of animal? Well, I'll write about primates, endangered primates. And that led to the first book on primates, which I acquired an expertise by traveling by myself around the world, through South America, down the Amazon, across Africa, and into southern India and Southeast Asia. And by the end of that trip, I did have a book, and my goal was to find the world's 12 most endangered primates. And I knew something about primates, and chimpanzees are a primate species. I didn't write about chimps because I felt there was just so much written about them already. And that's when the second book about chimpanzees came up, and that's how I met Jane. By then, I really did know something, and so I think it was a good time to meet Jane Goodall.
I want to talk a little bit more in detail about your latest book, The Ghosts of Gombe. I find this fascinating because, I knew who Jane Goodall was. I knew nothing about the daily life of being in one of these camps with the Jane Goodall and all of the rest. And you detail that, don't you? Even including some of the, kind of gossipy stuff that takes place in these camps. Talk about that a little bit, Dale.
Well, I think gossip is good because it tells you, it's the personal stuff. It tells you what, it's the human stuff. And, some of the gossip from this time, some of the researchers were smoking marijuana. Jane, when she found out, of course, was very alarmed and stirred by that, but it still went on. There were, it was a very remote place at that time, much more so than it is today, very hard to get into and out of. You didn't have the sort of internet communications that you have now, or even good radio communication. They would get news magazines America, but they would arrive in the mail, 2 or 3 weeks later than, so you always got late news, and they weren't getting good radio reception either, so sometimes they might hear a bit from the Voice of America, but it was a very, very isolated place, and that's part of what I explore in this is, people were not necessarily getting along. You had a small group of researchers there, and in this situation of great intimacy and isolation simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So if you can imagine, you know, the first flight to Mars with five astronauts crowded into a single spaceship, it was a bit like that. And that's hard. And I just wanted to explore that psychological and social dynamic, because I thought that was really part of the story. And, you know, as I said earlier, you know, the spine of this whole story is what happened to Ruth. And part of what happened, I don't know how it plays out, or I you know, but part of what happened was she was, you know, there were some difficulties among the researchers, and Ruth was felt alienated.
Hmm. There were also a couple of romantic liaisons, which is understandable when you're that isolated, you know, in Africa. That would be pretty logical to happen. And there
and
also
one breakup of a marriage.
Oh. You had researchers working at this camp from two different continents. There were European researchers there along with Americans, right?
That's right. And, in fact, there were, of course, the African staff who gradually were becoming themselves very professionalized and part of the scientific staff. And there were, you know, also Europeans who had grown up in Africa. So it was the cultural mix was complicated, and that, I think, added a lot to the social tensions that were going on during this period.
Do you think that you have the final answer on just exactly what happened to Ruth Davis, or you're not sure yet?
Well, I think I've come closer to it than when I started the book. We have to realize this happened 50 years ago, so there's probably no perfect answer, but I do give an answer, and anybody who is curious should read the book and find out. It's on the last page.
Do you have, do you have a website, Dale Peterson?
I do. It's DalePetersonAuthor.com.
And are some of your earlier books, particularly the biography of Jane Goodall, is that still in print? Is that still available too?
Yes, it is. A lot of my earlier books are still available, and yeah, some of them are still pretty actively selling.
Dale,
one from 20 years ago is still selling well.
Dale Peterson, our guest, listeners, the author of, and it's really, I don't know, The Ghosts of Gombe is a fascinating book. You have to kind of pinch yourself every once in a while to realize it's a true story. The Ghosts of Gombe, a true story of love and death in an African wilderness by Dale Peterson. It's been a delight to talk with you, Dale. Thanks for spending some time with us here today. Enjoyed it.
Well, good. I enjoyed it too, Dave, and thanks for inviting me.
Sure, sure. So long now.
All right. Bye.
It's going to be an interesting story, huh? True story, too. More to come on It's Your Turn. We've got Master Gardeners coming in here in just a couple of minutes. We'll tell you all about the upcoming Spring Garden Market, a huge show this coming Saturday at Alameda Park. One of our sponsors on the program today is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Quite simply, they package your items for shipping, and it's really, really convenient. I've used their services. You don't have to worry about finding the right size box or the bubble wrap or the mailing labels or that special tape or any of that. Just take your items to Gone Postal Butler, and they'll pack them up for you. You can ship them U.S. Postal Service, UPS, FedEx. That's your choice. They'll do it any way you want. They're located at 140 Shockey Lane. Now, that's in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. It's just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. They're open Monday through Friday. They also have a copying service, scanning, faxing. You can rent a temporary mailbox there. Oh, and they have local honey, too. It's delicious. Really good. Here's a phone number. Call for more info, 724-841-0044. 841-0044. Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Are you confused about your Medicare choices? The entire process can be overwhelming. So consider calling Medicare Mike at Health Benefit Options. He's an independent agent who represents all the major insurance carriers. He works for you, not the insurance carrier, and his service is free. Medicare Mike will explain the difference between Medicare Supplement and Medicare Advantage plans in a way you can understand. Medications can be your biggest cost, so he'll do an in-depth drug analysis of all your medications and tell you what you will spend in each plan. His loyalty is to you, his client. Call Medicare Mike, 724-705-0068.
We all love the smell of fresh-cut grass, flowers blooming, and a nice warm rain. But those often mean that it's time for allergies. At Institute Hill Pharmacy, you will get the personalized care for your allergies that you deserve. Zyrtec, Allegra, Claritin, and all of your allergy prescription needs can be taken care of at Institute Hill Pharmacy, 937 East Jefferson Street in Butler, or call them at 724-285-3693. And make sure to like them on Facebook. Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember. Welcome back, good friends. Oh, we're going to talk about plants and gardening on the next segment of the program. Nice to have you with us, and certainly nice to welcome Justine Brown, Master Gardener, Penn State Extension Master Gardener. Justine, good to see you again.
It's good to see you too, Dave. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's fun. This time of year is fun, too, isn't it, if you're a gardener?
It is. It's wonderful now that we have some warm weather to see everything greening up. And even with all the rain, it's just the temperature's better. It's wonderful to see the flowers and the trees starting to pop.
All's right with the world.
So far, so good.
Yeah. Also visiting with us is the new program director for the Butler County Parks and Recreation Department. And we say hello, meet and say hello to Tim Calvert. Tim, nice to have you here today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. How long are you on the job?
I started end of March, so a few months in now.
Not all that long ago.
No,
huh? Yeah.
No.
Well, welcome. The upcoming spring garden market is co-sponsored, right, Justine, by the Master Gardeners and by the Butler County Parks and Recreation Department.
Yes, we've been working together with them for 4 or 5 years now, and it's a wonderful partnership. They really do a lot to help us bring this event to the community, not only by allowing us the venue, but also just in their day-to-day answering phone calls, taking the money, sending out confirmation letters, all of that important stuff.
We should mention the date. It's this Saturday.
Saturday, May 19th from 9 to 3.
It's one day only, and I can't emphasize enough, folks, this is a big event. This is a wonderful event. It draws a huge crowd to Alameda. You really need a place as big as Alameda Park to handle the crowd, right?
Oh, we do. It used to be, we used to have it down at the Suck Up Conservancy that's now owned by the Audubon Society. And I absolutely loved it down there. It was a beautiful venue. You know, the house is beautiful, the trees and the birds and the nature, and parking was not so good. And we really outgrew that space.
Mm-hmm.
The Alameda Park has been a wonderful venue for us to expand to as much as we need, and even beyond, actually.
Tim, have you been to one of these before? Obviously, you're new on the job as a program director.
Yeah, I actually have. I used to be the pool manager at Alameda Pool. So, back in my years there, I always was around when the event was going on, whether it be doing work at the pool or just being at the event helping out wherever I could. So I've seen the event in action, and like you said, it is busy.
For people who have not been there before, let's explain just exactly where it is. When I'm describing Alameda Park, I always say, well, there's the lower part of the park, and then there's the upper part of the park. And this event is in the upper part, right?
Correct. Yes, it's back in our Oddfellow Loop. So It's on the upper part of the park, but it's also kind of our newer part of the park. We built four shelters back there, actually five shelters back there, about 6 years ago now. So it's back where all those brand new shelters are at.
Mm-hmm. So if you come into the main entrance to Alameda Park and you go past the pool area and the purple playground, down around the turn, then it's back in there, right?
Yeah, it's past the pine shelter and the holly shelter, past the field that we have there as well. So as you're coming down, you know, around the corner, heading towards the field, you'll see the big Oddfellow gazebo, and it's right back in there.
Now, there's some parking there, but not enough to handle the crowds. Do you have, like, a shuttle service or something?
We do. We'll have two vans going back and forth through the park based on where people were parking at the time. They'll come pick people up with the car. We'll have different stops for them as well that they can kind of head towards, and the vans will stop, pick them up, and drop them off right by the gate, right pretty much where the first vendors are for the event.
Now, that's convenient. Not that it's a 10-mile walk, but for some people that might be a little bit of a jaunt, so it would be nice to take the shuttle.
Right, it is. And especially if you have purchased a lot of wonderful plants and crafts, the shuttle is always nice. And the 4-H, again, are going to graciously be our plant valets. So the kids will be circling the park with their wagons and picking up all of your plant purchases and your shrub purchases and plants, sitting them right by the entrance. So you can go out to your car, drive right to the loop of the park, right to the entrance at the gate, and pick up your plants.
Wouldn't this be nice when you're Christmas shopping, folks, to have a personal valet with a little wagon? You can imagine how much even more convenient it is when you're buying plants and flats and stuff
like that. Oh, it is. It's wonderful. And the kids are very willing to move your plants to the plant sitting area, and they're working for tips. 4-H, kids have to be self-funded, and so they are going to be working for tips. So by all means, look for their yellow, bright yellow vests and get them to help you carry your purchases.
And give them a tip, for goodness sakes.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. They're working hard.
Yeah. So tell us what we'll see when we head out to Alameda Park on Saturday. What all is going to happen there, Justin?
We have lots of things going on as usual and lots of new things going on. The biggest thing is the Master Gardener Plant Sale, which you know is our biggest fundraiser of the year, and that's why a lot of people come. Donna Eubanks and Susan Struthers have been working very hard growing plants and getting some new varieties of things from the middle part of the state, things that we might not have seen around here lately. Some of the Master Gardeners have been working out at Metrics Harvest View Farms, nurturing plants along the way. And the Master Gardeners will also be bringing some of the plants from their yards, too. So we have lots of varieties of perennials and mostly perennials, some vegetables, some herbs, that kind of stuff.
Are some of these plants that do particularly well here in our immediate area? Because, you know, different parts of the country, even different parts of Pennsylvania, some plants do better in some sections than in others.
I'm sure they've taken that into consideration. They know that things that are grown here know how to deal with our weather conditions in western Pennsylvania. So I'm sure that Donna and Susan have purchased only things that are going to do well in our area. Mm-hmm. But we have other growers there too. You know, Dave Heim from Green Valley's there. Greenhouse 22 from Ford City and Dan Boylstein will be here, among others. Carl Keller has beautiful shrubs and perennials. Jeff Raybold will be here, among others. Always Summer Herbs from Slippery Rock will be there. Metric Farms will also be there with some onion sets and seeds.
That's Ken Metric and his gang out
there.
Yes,
yes, yes. They're one of our sponsors. We worked with them last year to nurture some of the plants that the Master Gardeners have been starting. So they've been very helpful to us.
Nice of Ken to provide that space. He's a good guy, too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But we have a big children's area this year. As usual, Home Depot is there with their wonderful wood crafts for the kids, and that's always a fun time for the kids. We'll have face painting. a couple of new things this year. One is a petting zoo, which I'm excited about because I've been wanting a petting zoo for a while. I think the kids enjoy seeing the animals and
And touching them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're also, we've invited the Kids Weekend Backpack Program that some of the teachers and the community have started this school year to come and provide some information for the parents. But they're also going to be providing a couple of activities for the kids. But they would also like to for the public to bring some canned goods that they can use for the backpack program.
Are you familiar, Tim, with this program, backpack program? It's been, and I'm only familiar with it because I did an interview with some of the teachers. I think it started at McQuiston Elementary, if I'm correct.
I think it did. Kim Thomas from McQuiston, I believe she teaches at McQuiston.
Well, there are a lot of families who might not have the wherewithal to provide healthy meals for kids over the weekend. Now, the kids get a nutritious meal at school 5 days a week, but then what happens on Saturday and Sunday? We don't want them existing on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches all the time, and that's the case in some areas. So they started this backpack program where they collect non-perishable items. Kids take it home in their backpack so that they have healthy stuff to eat on the weekend.
Yeah, it's a program that I wish I had time to devote to because I think it's a very critical thing for so many of the kids in our community. And we a lot of times think that everybody has the wealth that we do, and that's just not the case. These kids are really in need, and because I'm a former teacher, I think I can say we can't teach them unless their bellies are full and they're not thinking about how hungry they are. So that food is really, really important. While we're on the subject, I'm going to throw out some things that people could bring. Just make sure that the expiration dates are far enough into the school year that they can use them in the fall. Mm-hmm. You know, like cereal bars, Easy Mac, and cheese, single-serving things, Chef Boyardee items, ramen noodles, microwavable pasta, things that are single-serving that the kids can use, single-serving fruit cups, like applesauce or other fruits, single-serving pudding or Jell-O, handy snacks, sandwich crackers, any of those kind of things they can use to fill the backpacks for the kids.
We're talking about the annual spring garden market, which takes place this coming Saturday. There's a home show, too, isn't there, as well?
Yeah, we have a lot of home people that will be coming, like Gutter Guard and Leaf Guard and some home improvement companies that come to share basement waterproofing things. To share what they do with the public. And if you have a need for that, that's a good place to in a non-threatening situation, to ask some questions to these people about your home problems that you might have. Mm-hmm. So that's always a good thing.
There's no admission charge, right, to get in?
Free to come in and walk around.
Yeah, yeah. That's
parking is free, too. So the Civil Air Patrol will be there. Parking is free. They'll direct you where you need to go. I talked to Keith and some of the members of the Civil Air Patrol who be there parking and guiding visitors where they need to go and where the parking spots are. So that's all free.
Don't worry about any of that. They'll take care of it for you. And again, if you end up parking some distance away, take the shuttle down to where all the action is.
And that is free as well. Just want to put that out there.
Shuttle's free too?
Shuttle's free as well.
We'll take a quick break. We'll talk more about the upcoming spring garden market this Saturday at Alameda Park in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is Butler Motor Tours. They have some wonderful trips coming up this summer. I want to tell you about just a couple of them. Here's a six-day trip in late June. Still time to plan for this. It's called Locomotives and Lighthouses. You go to New England. Stop first in the Poconos and then up to Connecticut. You do some touring there on the Connecticut coast. That's where the Nautilus Memorial is and the U.S. Coast Guard Museum. And then you take a cruise, New England South Coast Lighthouse Cruise, showcasing some of the most beautiful lighthouses. This cruise will take you through Narragansett Bay and through Newport. and then a guided tour of the Cape Cod area. Take the Cape Cod Gourmet Lunch Train, visit Cape Cod Cranberry Bogs, visit Plymouth Rock and the Pilgrim's Landing site. What a trip! 6 days in June. Get details from Butler Motor Tours online at their website, butlerbus.com. There's also a trip coming up in early July to Nashville to Opryland. How about Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island, two of the maritime provinces in Canada? That's in July. And a three-day Lady Liberty weekend to New York City for shopping and sightseeing. Again, details on these and many, many other trips. Affordable, fun, comfortable way to travel. Butler Motor Tours online at butlerbus.com. Butlerbus.com. We'll be right back.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 03-03. Pick three is 715-715. The pick four, 3370. The pick five, 12066. Wild ball for each of those is 9. The treasure hunt, 1, 9, 15, 27, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Chef George at Tanglewood, your hometown center for entertainment, always has something going on. There have been dinners and dances and dinner dances. But for the very first time, check out the Glitz and Glamour Designer Purse Bash on Saturday, May 19th. Purses from Dooney and Bourke, Coach and Vera Bradley are just a few. Doors open at 11, admissions $25, which includes brunch, Chinese auction baskets, and more. As always, it's BYOB. Call 287-0021 for ticket information. Purse sponsorships available as well.
Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Butler Transit now provides weekday transportation to and from Pittsburgh for just $5 one way. No worrying about traffic or expensive parking fees. Free Wi-Fi is also available. Park at a convenient park and ride or hop on the bus at the downtown bus terminal. Senior 65 and up, ride free with a senior pass. For more information, visit butlertransit.com.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Getting details, folks, about this Saturday's Spring Garden Market and Home Show at Alameda Park. It's a huge event, very popular event. Justine Brown, how many years?
16 years, can you believe it?
Wow.
Yeah, we've been doing this a long time.
Gets bigger and better every year, too. Now, folks, if you've not been to this, not only do you have the opportunity to talk with a lot of the vendors, you can buy plants and the Master Gardener's plants, but it's kind of a... It's kind of a fair atmosphere, a carnival atmosphere. It's great fun. There's music and stuff, right?
There's music. We have a DJ this year, something new. We've had live music in the past, but we decided just to change it up a little bit. And DJ Sammy will be there, and she will be playing fun music to shop by. And she'll be doing announcements for us and advertising the vendors that we have there on Saturday. So I'm looking forward to working with her. I think she's going to be a wonderful addition to our event.
You can be there for as long as you want. The hours are 9 to 3. If you're there for a couple of hours or more, you might get a little hungry.
Oh, yeah, and we have some good food vendors. A lot of the ones that have been there in the past, R&J Concessions, which have wonderful fair food. Dee's Dumplings is there, and they have gyros and funnel cakes and all of that fun stuff, and they have ice cream, too. The last year, I think, was the first time we had Hot Mama's Pierogies. And, you know, Western Pennsylvania is a pierogi area, and they have lots of wonderful pierogies to share. Lindora Bakery is there, and I know she's closed for the summer, but you can buy all of her wonderful things at the Spring Garden Market on Saturday. Wonderful cookies and baked goods, and she has a hot dog cart that she will bring also. And Funky Monkey Donuts from Katanning will be there also. So they'll have donuts and coffee, and there are new additions. So we're looking forward to all of... Come hungry, because we have wonderful food vendors.
I'm getting hungry just listening to her describe that, Tim.
I just had lunch, and I'm hungry again.
Yeah.
I think I want a donut. I think those donuts sound really good. I haven't had one for a while.
All of this at Alameda Park this coming Saturday. The park, I assume, Tim, despite some inclement weather conditions, everything is mowed up and ready to go for the big event?
Yeah, our maintenance staff is working on it as we speak. Because of the unfortunate weather, it has been growing a lot quicker than we always want. But
growing quicker, and it makes it more difficult to mow when you get this wet weather, too.
It does. It's hard to get the lawnmowers on the grass, but they're out there. They're putting the work in whenever they can, and it's looking nice. It's looking real nice for the weekend.
Are there any new improvements planned for Alameda Park this summer? I recall we did a story a couple of months ago from a county commissioner's meeting. They're going to be expanding the mountain bike trails, I think, or something like that. Is that work going to be going on this summer?
Yes. So we, on the weekends, on Saturdays, we have a volunteer group coming through. They've been expanding all the trails over the past few years. The goal is to get another 15 miles worth of trails. They're about 2 to 4 miles in right now. Mm-hmm. So,
and these wind through the wooded areas, I assume, for the most part?
They wind through the woods, through the forest, and all that stuff. They're sprucing up some of the old trails, and they're creating new trails as well. So
Alameda Park is big. I think I recall from county commissioners some years ago, it's 400 acres. Does that sound right?
Sounds about accurate, yeah.
It's a big plot
of
land.
It's a big place, yeah.
Yeah. Great foresight that the county commissioners decades ago obtained that property. Can you imagine what that would cost today?
Well, and it's a beautiful park, and it's amazing when we are there working on organizing this event. You know, we're there at various times of the day, and it's amazing how many people use that park. Mm-hmm. It's always in use from early morning until late at night. They're walking their dogs, they're swimming in the pool, they're playing in the playground, they're biking, they're playing in that big field. They have some, what kind of games do you have there?
So in the field, we hold an Ultimate Frisbee League in the summer, so that goes on Thursday nights. But then throughout the year, spring, summer, fall, we have Jumpstart Sports come in, and they're kind of like a learn-to-play program for t-ball and soccer. So they use our fields in the spring and fall. In the summertime, they move to BC3. Program still kind of comes through Butler County Parks and Rec, but the field gets used for a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. We have flag football in the fall as well, so we put the good use to it.
And lots of quiet green space if you just want to take a chair and read a book.
Absolutely, yes.
Under the shade of an oak or something like that.
It's true.
Alameda Park is just off Newcastle Road. We're chatting, by the way, if you're just joining us, with Tim Calvert. He's the new program director for Butler County Parks and Recreation Department. And also Justine Brown, who's a master gardener, Penn State Extension master gardener. So what kind of flowers do you plant in your flower bed? I've been going with marigolds for the past couple of years. Now, you're going to laugh at me, Justine, but I'm searching for a minimum care. I love colorful flowers, but I'm searching for minimum care. She's laughing already. It's obvious that I'm not a master gardener. I've tried everything. I've tried fuchsia. You got to keep caring for them. They need a lot of water. I tried the impatiens. Seems like I'm always deadheading those things. And then New Guinea impatiens. My goodness, they drink water faster than you can. You got to have a hose running on them all the time.
They really do. They really just suck up the water.
Or they wilt. They just flatten out. I've tried a number of different things. Petunias, you're always deadheading petunias. It drives me nuts. Plus, they stain your hands whenever you're deadheading them. So I hit on marigolds a couple of years ago. And by gosh, all you got to do is water them once in a while, and I don't think you can kill them.
And they keep the bugs away from your garden.
They do.
A couple of things I've been reading about are, one, there's million bells. There's a variety of a petunia-like flower that you don't have to worry about deadheading that really grows very well. You just have to water it every once in a while.
And what's that called again? I'm taking notes.
Like
here.
It's not the Latin name, but million bells.
Million bells.
And it has, it looks like a petunia, a small petunia, but it's very prolific. It's a beautiful hanging plant. It grows pretty well.
I was just going to ask if I could put those in some of my hanging baskets.
Oh, yeah. Another thing that would be good with that would be sweet potato vine. And they come in really a dark, I don't know what the official dark color is, but it's a dark burgundy. But they also have a very bright green bright, bright neon green.
Plus, I'd have sweet potatoes by September, right?
Actually, I've planted them at New Haven, and if you leave them in long enough, they grow, I mean, 4 or 5 feet.
Really?
If you water them. But sometimes I actually have found potatoes. Now, I don't know that I'd eat them, but in the soil. But they're very prolific in a hanging basket.
Well, those are two things that I've not heard of. By George, I'm going to give them a try on your recommendation.
And a sun patience. Those are a new variety of impatience that I think I'm not going to say what I think they are. But they're very nice. They also, you don't have to worry about deadheading them because they just continue to grow beyond the dead flowers and are very prolific, and you just have to water them.
Well, I can do that, but otherwise I get a little lazy sometimes.
Well, I personally like hosta. If you have, anybody who knows me knows that I have tons of hosta in my yard, but I also do not have deer, and that's a vegetable garden. If the deer found my yard, they'd never leave because they love hosta. Fortunately, knock on wood. I'm keeping them out, but
I have to get one final break in here, and then we'll wrap up with some of the other details. One of our sponsors on the program is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Hey, folks, just a quick word. Spring cleaning time, right? Have you started yet? I actually started early this year. Usually takes me till July. So far, I've got 2 shelves of 1 closet done.
Well,
it's a start.
It's a start.
It's a start. If you're doing your spring cleaning and you end up with the items that you don't need or don't want anymore, maybe you don't have room for them, if it's clothing, maybe it doesn't fit anymore, whatever, don't just toss this stuff into the trash because that goes into the landfill and we don't need to put anything more than we have to in there. Consider donating these items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 just south of Butler. They'll sell them, and every penny from the proceeds of the operation of that store helps to fund the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank and their client aid program. So you get rid of stuff that you don't want or don't need, they sell it, and you help to fund the food bank. Win, win, win. They're open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. There's tons of free parking right at the door. The drop-off bins are right inside the front door. Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart. We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. A quick wrap-up of what's going to be happening this Saturday at the Spring Garden Market and Home Show at Alameda Park. Justine Brown, the hours again are?
From 9 to 3 on Saturday, rain or shine, come and visit us. I want to mention we have crafts, too. Lots of crafters like Just Us Girls and a lot of other crafters come. So it's not just plants, it's not just food and kids, there are crafts too. And when we're talking about the food, I forgot to mention Butler County Butler Garden Club will be there with their mushroom sandwiches. You got to try them.
Wow.
They're wonderful.
You could spend the whole time there, folks, from 9 to
3.
Easily you would be entertained. And take the kids, for goodness sakes. Lots of stuff for them, too.
Lots of stuff. Home Depot, a petting zoo, the kids' backpack program. Bring something that's non-perishable that they can put in the kids' backpacks in the fall. That's an important piece for this year's market.
Justine Brown and Tim Calvert visiting with us. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you.
Good to talk with you. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow, folks, looking forward to a nice sit-down chat with Dave Todd, former general manager of what was then Armco. Dave Todd has written a couple of books about the mill. He's a treasure trove of history about Armco and now AK Steel. We'll talk about the Butler plant, the history of the Butler plant with Dave Todd tomorrow. Looking forward to that. Also tomorrow, Mary Chitwood will be here to tell us about Robin's Home. We're getting ready to pick up Pirate Baseball. It's going to be coming up in about a minute or so here on It's Your Turn. The Pirates closing out their brief 2-game series with the White Sox. That's next. We'll see you tomorrow at 12:30 for the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR.
Looking to get away for a day? Join WISR on our Wine and Winnings bus trip to Erie on June 2nd. We'll leave our Pillow Street location at 8:30 a.m. on Saturday, June 2nd, and head to Johnson Estate Winery in Westfield, New York for wine tastings. From there, we'll make a stop at Arrowhead Wine Cellars. Arrowhead offers samples of both wine and non-alcoholic juices and has a large gift shop offering a variety of products from jewelry and apparel to kitchenwares and gourmet food items. From there, our Butler Motor Tours Deluxe Motor Coach will take us to Presque Isle Downs Casino for the afternoon. Each member of our tour will receive $25 of free play from the casino. The cost for the trip is just $40 per person. Complete details and registration forms are available online at WISR680.com. Seating is limited, so register today.
Have coffee with Kate and Dave Malarkey weekday mornings after the 8 a.m. news on WISR 680 AM.